A Place to Stand. A Rokosigan fanfic by Light Gets In. Read by Calicuria. Miles attempts home renovation and historical investigation. Everyone else is just along for the ride. Give me a place to stand, and with a lever I will move the whole world. Archimedes. Even the horse was bored. In his stiff pose, Miles only had a direct view of the dark chestnut ears and the fall-splendored tree across the path, but the animal was moving beneath him, restless. Miles tilted his chin minutely, waited for one of the polite reprimands from the artist, and, not receiving one, risked another few centimeters, just enough to see Gregor out of the corner of his eye. Gregor had slipped on one of those remote, all-knowing masks of his, and Miles knew for a fact that he was capable of standing there like a statue for hours without complaint. Miles didn't know who had come up with this particular staging for the traditional imperial post-wedding portrait. It had been offered up as a foregone conclusion, and he cynically suspected a flurry of concealed planning. It was a pretty good pose. Gregor standing in the foreground, three-quarter profile at the stirrup of Miles's horse, reins in one hand and the other on the horse's neck. Miles was mounted behind him, gazing off into the distance, trying to look regal, but probably just managing over-caffeinated. It was formal, it was elegant, and it made it much less obvious that Miles was the wrong size. He was still the wrong gender, though he imagined there was a sizable population out there who would happily see that altered on canvas, too. "I think that's enough for today," the artist said at last. Miles let out a breath, stretched his arms over his head, then scratched the itch on the back of his neck that had been driving him slowly mad for 15 minutes straight. His left hand was trembling faintly, like it still did off and on, and apparently would for the rest of his life. "Can't we just take a hollow and blow it up real big?" he asked plaintively. "It's strange to me that someone with such an active mind can get so bored so quickly," Gregor said, and turned to offer him a hand down. Gregor's mind, left to itself, turned inward and lived on its own intricate machinery. Miles's, on the other hand, came bubbling out his ears. Lady Alice was approaching to check on their progress, and behind her hurried one of Gregor's secretaries with a stack of flimsies. They were coming to shuffle Gregor off, back into the labyrinth of his tightly scheduled day. "Miles?" Gregor prompted, touching his knee. "Back in a second," Miles said, scooped up the reins out of his hands, and leaned forward. The horse sprang to life, and they were off down the path, sliding from the warm-up walk he'd intended right into a quick, springy trot.
"If you say so," Miles said to the horse, pleased, and guided him left around the fountain to go deeper into the grounds, away from the residence itself. Up a gentle slope, and through the rose garden, and the horse's stride was already loosening up and stretching out. Miles clucked, and the transition into the canter was as smooth and precise as Lady Alice pouring a cup of tea.
"You're not just a pretty face, are you?" Miles said, and thumped the glossy neck affectionately. The path curved, but they went straight down on the open green. They startled the gardener, bending over one of the border hedges. The man shied more than the horse, which looked once and then away. He was orienting down the hill, and, squinting along his line, Miles saw one of the low stone benches at the base of the slope. The horse leaned into the canter, eager.
Ha! Thought there'd been an awful lot of suggestive hindquarters musculature.
This really isn't the saddle for that, you know, Miles said to him, still grinning. But he leaned forward, too, his body remembering how to do this, even though it had been...
God, it had been years.
Coming up fast, but not too fast, Miles let the horse take more of the work than he really should. But that seemed just fine, because he counted the strides, 1, 2, 3, and the rock back, and they floated over the bench as sweet and smooth as a light flyer.
Oh, I really like you,
Miles said spontaneously. But then they were swinging left through the orchard, finishing the loop he'd carelessly plotted. Everyone else was still on the path, waiting, and Miles slowed to a trot with a sigh, and then to a halt back in his place next to Gregor.
I take it you like him,
Gregor said, deadpan.
He's marvelous, Miles said, dismounting. Wasted on a modeling career.
Well, actually,
Gregor said, clasping his hands together in one of his very few tells.
What?
Miles asked, puzzled.
His name's Lumiere, Gregor said. He'll be here in the stables whenever you want him.
He'd gone faintly red, subliminally jittery, the way he got every time he offered a gift.
Oh, Miles said. Gregor, that...
Excuse me, sire. A Vorbara armsman hurried up the path. You asked me to tell you when Minister Mary arrived.
Yes, thank you.
Gregor lifted an apologetic hand to Miles.
I'm sorry, I've got to fit him in today.
Go on, Miles said. I'll see you later.
He took Lumiere back to the stable and chased a pack of grooms away to deal with the tack himself. Then he leaned on the open stall door while they got to know each other a bit. He had nowhere in particular to be, apparently, and Gregor had clearly intended to offer up some entertainment in place of anything else he couldn't offer, at least not right now. At last, Mal got out of the groom's way and wandered back up to the residence. By default, he went down to see his son, who was gestating away safely in an armored bunker under the east wing. The place was windowless and brightly lit, and the embryo had plenty of company, in the form of a full 6 guards outside the door, and another 2 in with him. Still, Miles had a weird urge to carry the gently humming machine up and set it on the sill of an open window like a potted plant, to thrive on sun and air. It turned out he wasn't the only one who'd come visiting.
Ah, the Count said. I wondered when one of you would show up. I've been here for an entire half hour.
We're exactly that bad,
Miles said, laughing. He bypassed the largely incomprehensible status screens to join his father at the holovid projected of the replicator.
He's adorable,
the Count said gravely.
He needs magnification to be visible,
Miles retorted, grinning.
Also, apparently not actually a he, yet. The chromosome is there, I mean, but developmentally it won't start expressing for another 8 or 9 weeks or so.
Gregor's Y chromosome, to be precise.
Miles wasn't actually sure who had floated the thought that there might be some sort of socio-political ramifications on that point, but he'd found the ensuing discussions hilarious in the extreme. At least, until he'd realized how uncomfortable the whole thing was making Gregor, knowing that at least that vital scrap of genetic destiny was, with only tiny in vivo mutations, a perfect match for his father's. They contemplated cellular division in companionable silence. The Count stood unsmiling, parade perfect, but for his hands clasped behind his back. Miles self-consciously shifted forward onto one foot as soon as he realized he was mirroring his father.
"What are you thinking about there, Granda?"
he asked.
"The
Count said, a pleased little smile touching his lips.
"Now there's a promotion I've been waiting for."
Miles scuffed a toe. "Yeah, sorry about that," he said. "The wait, I mean. You must be relieved." The Count flicked an ironic glance to the silent Impsec captain, armed with stunner and disruptor, posted against the back wall.
"A weight off my mind," he said dryly.
Then he opened both hands in quick conciliation, forestalling the next choreographed steps of that particular dance. They had it down to well-worn grooves by now.
"I'm just glad I get to meet him," he said, then caught himself again. "Damn. Sorry, boy."
He dropped a hand on Miles's back.
"I'm rotten company today."
"Any reason?"
"No, just thinking about legacies,"
the Count said obscurely. Miles frowned. "An unpleasant thought?" he asked. The Count's head snapped around.
"No," he said, firm and clear. "Never."
He gripped Miles's shoulder, sighed.
"Really, don't mind me. The future is a mirror, which also means it reflects what's behind you."
Miles blinked, puzzling at that.
"Enough,"
the Count said briskly.
"Have you decided what you're going to do with him?"
He jerked his chin to the busy replicator.
"I think we've pretty definitively settled on raising him," Miles said. "Might teach him to read and everything."
"I meant physically,"
the Count said.
"Have you decided to rearrange Greg, your apartment here, or will you move to another suite?"
"Oh," Miles said, taken aback. "That's an interesting point you make, Doc." He chewed thoughtfully on a knuckle. He really liked what Gregor had now. Though it was a bit crowded, with the addition of Miles's accumulated detritus. They could always combine the study in the library. Miles cast a dubious look at the innocent little replicator.
"Lots of room," the Count said, unprompted. "Acres and acres."
"Huh," Miles said. "What are we going to do with him?" The Count clapped him companionably on the shoulder.
"Come to dinner soon," he said. "The two of you, I mean, of course. You haven't been home since the wedding."
"Believe me, I know," Miles said. He had always expected to live out his life in Borkosigan House, in the old multi-generational cohabiting way. Such a strange thing, to be swept off under someone else's roof. "How about tomorrow?" he said impulsively, then corrected himself. "I'll have to check with Gregor and message you in the morning. The Count took his leave, and Miles stayed only a few more minutes in distracted contemplation, before heading slowly back up and into the north wing. He glanced in at Gregor's antechamber. Lord Auditor Vorhovis was just making his bow in the doorway. Coming in, not going out. Curiosity prickled. He'd seen Gregor's schedule just this morning, and Vorhovis wasn't on it. The urge to go invite himself in was overpowering. He now had a security clearance to match Gregor's, which wasn't so much a clearance as a statement of absolute right. So he could hear anything Vorhovis and Gregor might need to talk about. Miles turned away. If Gregor had wanted his input, he would have asked. There really was no such thing as an absolute right, after all. Gregor's outer office was all antique hardwoods and hand-woven carpets. In contrast, Miles's own was crowded, noisy, and covered in a persistent layer of construction dust. Two techs lay prostrate on the bare boards, arguing over a gaping panel of circuitry. Captain Avalos hunched at his temporary comm console, doggedly ignoring them as he plugged away at something. He caught a glimpse of Miles out of the corner of his eye and leapt to his feet.
"My lord," he said, "can I help you with anything?"
"Ah," Miles said. "Actually, am I supposed to be doing anything right now?" The techs had fallen silent at his entrance. Their eyes were heavy on his back.
"No, my lord," Avalos said helpfully. He didn't have to check Miles's schedule, never out of arm's reach. "Your next engagement isn't until tomorrow afternoon. You're to accompany the Emperor to Count Forswassen's..."
"Right," Miles said. "So, what are you doing?"
"Your correspondence, my lord."
How horrified would he be if Miles pleaded to be allowed to help sort the mail?
"Carry on, then," he said, sighing. "And let me know if there's anything interesting."
Avalos extended a hand as Miles turned to go. "They've just put in your comm console, actually. There are some messages waiting."
"Really?"
Miles turned back, delighted. "The desk is temporary, of course," Avalos said. "But yes, the security people just finished this morning."
"Thanks,"
Miles said. He went to the inner room, then turned back.
"Oh, and hunt up a copy of the residence blueprints for me, will you?"
The comm console was the only clean thing in what would, eventually, be his office. It sat on a standard-issue IMPSEC desk, pending the painting and the carpet and the furniture commissioned from the southern continent, and the arts on loan from a few eager museums. Until then, he had a comm console, a chair, and an impressive pile of construction tools against the far wall. Miles powered up the station, verified his identity with thumb and retina, and examined his new fiefdom with interest. He tapped through to a main directory. Someone had imported his data from the comm console at Vorkosigan House, and then added all the new things he would need. His old address book sat side by side with an open pipeline straight to the top-level ops data channel. Miles amused himself for a few minutes, watching Admirals Vortain and Palian argue about the significance of the recent explosions in Escobaran ship production, then moved on. He had access to Gregor's schedules, all three of them, at successively deepening layers of privacy and complexity. He also had the ability to edit them at will, which was the single most enticing thing he'd learned in the past week. He tapped through to the financial documents, and gaped. Someone had been very busy. There were his familiar Vorkosigan holdings, clearly delineated with the usual access to the district books and the separate personal accounts. Below that was an entire new set, trailing a boggling complement of zeros. There was yet another personal account, flagged with his new title. Miles tapped into it apprehensively, and thought that he might want to put his head down between his knees for a moment.
It was a staggering portfolio. Mostly securities, and not just Barry Arne, either. There was a separate category for income from real property. Miles called up more details, and found that most holdings had been signed into joint ownership with Gregor, though a significant number were now his outright. Those, he saw as he dug deeper, had lain in trust for years under Gregor's name, untouched. In fact, the last activity, aside from maintenance, was recorded as, yes, it really was, Princess Corrine, cashing out a tidy sum, 6 months before her death. Contingency plans? It's what I would have done. He also had a new household account. Making quick comparisons in his head, Miles discovered that Gregor's consort was expected to require a monthly budget that could, just for example, support the upkeep of a mid-sized mercenary fleet. Good God. Someone had helpfully organized various pools for assorted domestic needs, including a fund marked discretionary, charitable. That, at least, was familiar territory. He'd had a fund like that since he'd reached his majority. Though not quite on this scale. Miles contemplated briefly, then excised 40% of the amount and appended the transfer to a note to his mother, commending it to her various philanthropic endeavors. There. That was something, at least. On to the correspondence, then. Avalos had helpfully sorted things into categories for him. Miles grinned. They weren't called people you actually give a damn about, and people you have to give a damn about, but they might as well have been. Ivan had written him a cranky and seemingly pointless string of complaints this morning, composed when he ought to have been paying attention to the morning ops briefing, to judge by the timestamp. Miles scrawled, "Come for a drink," in reply. Ekaterin wanted to warmly reiterate her congratulations upon the conception of his first child. Miles thanked her, and asked delicately what in the world was wrong with Ivan. Delia Glenai wanted to talk to him about his winter wardrobe. Miles scribbled, "The week after never," then crossed it out, and proffered a workable time. Donna Veratir wanted him to drop a few words in Gregor's ear about textile tariffs. Sure, for all the good it would do Dono, which was absolutely none. Gregor himself had politely inquired if Miles would mind taking his place to christen the latest fleet cruiser in 6 weeks, as Gregor had a conflict. Canny, that. It wrapped Miles in a protective layer of figurehood ceremoniousness, while also gently reminding that he did embody tangible military authority now. Avalos knocked at the open door, just as Miles had dug down to the intimidating stack of invitations left to his personal discretion. "Ah," Miles said, pushing back from the desk. "Find it?" "Yes, my lord." Avalos came in, and unrolled an enormous flimsy across the desk at Miles's gesture. "The resident steward is at your disposal, as well." "Thanks," Miles said absently, circling his desk to find the east wing. All right, and there was Gregor's current apartment. These must be classified blueprints. 2 out of the 4 emergency exits were actually marked. "Are you looking for something in particular?" Avalos asked at his shoulder. "Space," Miles said, tracing lines with his finger. Nearly the entire floor below the apartment was blocked off for security reasons. Gregor also had the overflow from his library down there, and his gymnasium. And right above the apartment was... All right, if you were going to put a very large anti-aircraft cannon anywhere, that was probably the logical place. Did the roof actually retract, or would they just vaporize it? And, perhaps more intriguingly,
How had they gotten it up the bloody stairs, when Miles's own damn couch hadn't fit? Does that actually say?
Avalos leaned close, squinting.
Emperor Dorka,
Miles confirmed, tapping the block of rooms up the hall from Gregor's.
His personal suite.
He eyed Avalos's reaction.
He had to sleep somewhere, you know. I think the senior seat again an occupying general took it over as a symbolic gesture when they held the capital.
Oh, right, Avalos said, enlightened. And then the Emperor pinned him to the wall with a sword through his heart when he retook the city.
He gave him a drink first, Miles said. And, by all accounts, a civil game of Tactico.
He considered the map uncertainly.
Story doesn't say if they actually left him there as a, permanent decoration.
Could go look, Avalo said practically. The rooms aren't sealed, at least not by these blueprints.
No, Miles said slowly. They aren't, are they?
He measured the space with his fingers, glancing at the scale. There was already one large bedroom, which could be converted into a nursery easily enough, and beyond that, a string of other rooms, to grow on. Only...
What's this, though?
Miles asked, finger coming to rest in the space between Gregor's sitting room and Dorka's bedroom. Clearly something there, but there were no doors marked, not even a notation that the room had been sealed for the sake of history or safety.
That's strange, Avalo said. I can go ask the steward, if you like.
The comm console chimed.
Yes, do that, Miles said, and went to see if anything interesting had made it through to him, in the absence of Avalos's filters.
It was his mother, volleying the money right back at him.
Nice try, she said, but do your own.
Well, worth a shot.
He doesn't know, Avalos said,
appearing in the doorway, faintly out of breath. And he says that's the most detailed blueprints he knows of, though General Allegre might have something different.
I doubt it, Miles said, straightening slowly.
The most highly secure deep storage in the Imperium used to be between Simonilian's ears. Writing things down was just asking for trouble. He pondered for a moment, foot tapping convulsively. His restless eye swept the bare walls, the stripped floor, and came to rest in the far corner.
Well,
Miles said, and rubbed his hands together.
My lord?
Avalos asked, suddenly apprehensive, for no reason Miles could see.
Bring these, Miles said, and shoved the blueprints at him.
For himself. He retrieved the precision laser drill, abandoned with the rest of the construction detritus. It was a lot heavier than it looked, and Miles grunted as he shouldered it.
My lord!
Avalos said, in an entirely different tone, jogging after him through the outer office. Miles was feeling charitable, so he propped the lift door with the stock of the drill until Avalos caught up.
My lord! You aren't about to do what I think you're about to do?
Avalos asked forbiddingly.
Says the man who wanted to go check for Cetagandan skeletons 5 minutes ago,
Miles said, and pushed ahead of him out of the lift. The guard on duty at the mouth of the corridor did a double take, and Miles saluted him with the drill.
I'm pretty sure this is one of those times I'm supposed to lodge my strenuous objections,
Avalos said. Miles struggled momentarily at their apartment door, encumbered by the heavy drill, and Avalos huffed as he reached past to open it for him.
Lord Ivan actually recommended knocking you down and sitting on you, but...
He made an untranslatable, helpless gesture.
That wouldn't be very sporting, Miles said.
Pulled from the field or not, Avalos could probably take him down in under 3 seconds, though Miles would like to think he wouldn't entirely disgrace himself.
"Damn right," Avalos said dourly. "Don't know anyone who's ever managed to wrestle down an oncoming flood."
"Objections noted," Miles said, trotting into the sitting room. A maid leapt up, startled, from where she had been dusting the lower bookshelves.
No, we don't need anything," Miles said. "Only the room, please."
"He means he doesn't want any more witnesses than he absolutely needs," Avalos added helpfully, and the poor girl skittered out, duster in hand.
"Right," Miles said. "Here, clear the table. Do you have a measuring tape on you?"
"I must have left it in my other trousers," Avalos said, unrolling the blueprints again.
"No matter," Miles said cheerfully. "Looks like we share..."
He crossed the room and thumped a fist into the plaster. "This entire wall."
"Huh,"
he added, after a moment's contemplation.
"Yes?"
Avalos prompted, in the act of lifting down a large painting of the Petra Cliffs from over Miles's head. "Perhaps you are having something like a second thought?"
"No," Miles said, distracted. "Only remembering. I stood here once, nearly 5 years ago, my God. Back up against the wall, fighting with Gregor."
His fisted hand slowly opened, and he pressed his palm to the wall.
"You fight with the Emperor?"
Avalos asked, in tones of mingled horror and awe.
"Oh, not if either of us can help it," Miles said. "And that time we really couldn't."
He squinted into the past. It had been a densely packed argument, ostensibly about Miles's safety from an unknown assassin, but in reality about Gregor's persistent, insoluble terrors. And, of course, about the painful inequity between them. With Gregor freely offering his beating heart in both hands, and Miles unsure whether he could accept more than the old abiding friendship. He had fled the residence that night, and kept on going right off Barriar, halfway across the Nexus, until he could breathe again.
"Walls,"
said Miles obscurely, braced his feet, and thumped the drill into the plaster.
"Is this a good time to ask if you have any idea how to work that thing?"
Avalos said, taking 2 unflattering steps back.
"Looks simple enough," Miles said, twirling his thumb to widen the laser bit to its largest circumference.
He set his grip and turned the drill on. It whined, bucked in his hands, and slid crookedly into the wall like a spoon into warm groats. Miles hastily switched it off, and backed out again, unwilling to go through and right onto whatever lay on the other side, particularly if it happened to be the sewage lines for this floor. Now there was an unpleasant thought. "Just insulation, so far," Avalos reported, poking into the round hole with his light pen.
"Would you like me to do that?"
"I got it,"
Miles said, though his shoulders were screaming protest. "Leave the destruction of property to your commanding officers. That's what I always say."
"That's not what I hear," Avalos said tartly, but stepped aside.
"Remind me never to let you talk to Cousin Ivan again," Miles said, and powered the drill up, leaning gently into the push until the resistance suddenly gave way.
"Aha! Here we go. Can you find a..."
"Oh, thanks."
Avalos relieved him of the drill, swapping him for a tiny, ornate lamp liberated from a corner table. Miles slid it into the hole, whose smooth edges were only faintly warm. He leaned close, breathing in a lungful of plaster and insulation, and behind that, a musty funk. If this actually is a Cetaganan skeleton, It wasn't. At least, not in the inadequate illumination of the lamp, limited to Miles's narrow angle of view. He could see the floor, which was the old hardwood of the original construction, and the corner of a colorful rug. Other than that, there was a lot of darkness. Miles said. This may take a while. They took turns at the drill, after all, slowly widening the hole until Miles could lean his entire torso through and get a better look. Huh, he said, after a long pause. Well? Avalos asked. He didn't actually shove Miles over to get a look for himself, but it was strongly implied. It's a bedroom, Miles said slowly, playing the light over the bed with the ornately carved wooden headboard, the nightstand, the desk in the corner, the bookshelves. Lots of bookshelves. Why is it shut, then? Avalos asked.
A good question, Miles said, and hitched one knee up to the lip of the hole. The wall cracked and crumbled under his weight, making the mess that the laser drill had avoided. Avalos, for once without sarcastic comment, quickly supplied his cupped hands to boost Miles's knee, then tipped him neatly through with a shove to the other foot. "Go find me a better light, will you?" Miles said, picking himself up. He sniffed, and promptly sneezed a half dozen times, rapid fire. Damn dusty, unsurprisingly, but mostly the air had that stagnant quality of a long-sealed tomb. Miles made a slow circuit of the periphery. Many books, all on paper. Some philosophy, some poetry, some novels, a lot of history. He took a few down to check the dates. Nothing less than a century old, at least in his tiny sampling. He tried the desk. A stack of fresh paper was waiting, complete with ink in actual bottles. Miles looked for a seal, but didn't find one. Not too strange, considering most people wore theirs. There was a dagger in the top drawer. Even in the bad light, Miles could see a flaked, rusty stain at the top, as if someone hadn't cleaned it the last time they'd sealed a letter the old-fashioned way. Everything was precisely organized, but there were some obvious gaps. No date book, for one, and no calendar, and no correspondence with names helpfully appended. Miles made his search quick, but thorough, and then moved on to the nightstand. There was a stack of books there, too, all with faded ribbons marking someone's place. The contents of a teacup had long since evaporated, leaving a brittle dark sludge in the bottom. On the wall just above hung several branches of dried flowers. Miles was afraid to breathe too hard near them, for fear of accidental disintegration. He sat gingerly on the side of the bed and tried the top drawer. Aha! There was the correspondence. Reams of it in neat stacks. Miles tugged gently at the ribbon binding the topmost bundle, then carefully twitched out a folded sheet. Quality paper, his fingertips catalogued, even if fragile and aged. Miles unfolded it tenderly on his knee and bent close, squinting as he skimmed down for salutation and signature. An unrevealing, if evocative, "My heart," for the first. And as for the second,
bad day?
Miles leapt, swallowed a shriek, and the letter slid off his knees onto the floor. Ivan, you idiot! Miles snapped. The voice had issued from the hole in the wall, where a dark shape loomed. Miles would know that drawl anywhere. He fumbled on the floor, collected the letter with reverent hands that shook only a bit in reaction to the shock.
"I know I'm going to regret asking this," Ivan said, But what in all the tiny hells are you doing?
Miles folded the letter, put it in its place, and quietly shut the drawer.
A spot of home renovation, he said, and crossed to the hole.
Get out of the way, will you?
Ivan did, and Miles slithered back through, managing not to land on his head. Avalos was just coming in, a selection of hand lights tucked under one arm.
Sorry, my lord, he said. Do you still need these?
Not at the moment, Miles said, tugging fruitlessly at his rumpled jacket. What I think I need is an antiquarian, or a preservationist, anyway.
Whose room is it, then? Avalos asked curiously.
I have no idea, Miles said. But I just opened a handwritten letter from Emperor Dorka, and I'd really love to read it without cracking it in half.
I'll get right on that, Avalos said, leaving the lights and promptly reversing course.
And then go home, Miles shouted after him. Don't let me catch you at your comm console after midnight.
Hi, said the ignored Ivan. You're filthy.
So I am, Miles agreed, looking down. What'd you want?
Drink, remember? Ivan said. You didn't say when, but I messaged him.
He jerked a thumb after Avalos.
And he said you were free.
Right, Mal said, pleased. A drink. Yes. Give me a minute, and we'll go. Ivan tracked him down the hall.
Go? He repeated. Where?
Dunno. Miles ducked into the refresher and did some rapid scrubbing of face and hands. Where are you drinking these days?
Well, there's my house,
Ivan said dubiously. Ekaterin isn't much for... but I have some wine. Miles padded back out to the comm console in his stockinged feet. In place of a vulnerable glass window, they had an inset hollow panel that projected a view of the outside world. It showed twilight now, accurate to the second, yet still subtly wrong to Miles's eye. He brought up Gregor's secretary with a single tap.
The Emperor is meeting with Lord Auditor Vorhovas,
Stavely informed him helpfully.
Would you like me to convey a message?
Still?
No thanks, Miles said, and cut the connection.
No, he continued to Ivan, ducking into the closet for a change of clothes. Somewhere with people, and possibly music.
Are you sure you're allowed to do that?
Ivan asked from the other room. He was familiarly blunt, but it came to exactly the same thing Avalos had been saying all day.
Miles ground his teeth
and jabbed at his wrist comm to summon Colonel and Sari.
That's what I want to find out.
They compromised, after a relatively short three-way negotiation, on the Emperor's arms. It wasn't a particular officer favorite, which made Ivan happy. They could come in through the back and get a sheltered corner table without anyone noticing, which made Inseri happy. And they had a lot of whiskey, which was making Miles increasingly happy.
So?
Miles prompted as the second round was delivered.
What crawled up your nose this morning?
Oh, you know. Ivan waved a dismissive hand. Just another day. Another 7:30 briefing. Bet you had a lie-in,
he added resentfully.
I asked Avalos. He said you had a long, hard day of getting yourself immortalized on canvas.
Hmm, said Miles, spinning his glass between his hands.
Yeah, very relaxing. Anyway, said Ivan. How's the next generation coming along?
He had inquired nearly every day since the conception, more slavishly devoted than anybody, except maybe Gregor.
Cooking up nicely, Miles said.
Don't worry, you'll be off the hook, right on schedule.
Ivan beamed. To the Crown Prince, he said piously. May he gestate in happy peace. They both drank to that. Anyway, Ivan said, I would have thought you'd be off your head today, if anyone was.
The portrait isn't all that bad, Miles said. Well, the horse is nice.
Ivan blinked at him. Wait, you're telling me you don't know?
Know what? Miles set his glass down.
Oh, Ivan said, looking suddenly hunted. I don't suppose we can forget I ever said anything.
Ivan!
It's just a cartoon,
Ivan said quickly. In the paper this morning, very droll.
Oh, God, Miles said in mounting dread. And yes, now that he was thinking of it, no one had offered him a news flimsy this morning, which was strange.
He took a healthy slug from his glass.
All right, hit me, he said.
It was just a suggestion, really, Ivan said, about how you could, better fulfill your new role by, taking the dono route.
Taking the...
There was a sketch of you, Ivan added, with, you know...
He made a gesture with two suggestively cupped hands that Miles tried very hard not to comprehend.
He failed. I'm sure they didn't mean anything by it, Ivan said hastily, flattening against the back of the booth.
Miles breathed through his nose, in and out. All right, maybe I have a new benchmark for the ultimate sacrifice.
Okay, he said evenly. Right. I'm going to get up now and send one of my highly trained bodyguards to get the next round. Hopefully, he'll come back with the bottle.
I've got it, Ivan said, standing up quickly. He eyed Miles. And maybe some food wouldn't be a bad idea either, he added.
Miles opened his eyes to artificial dawn on his face, and the world doing a slow loop-de-loop around his head. He squeezed his eyes shut again, and counted out a dozen careful breaths before turning his face away from the light and trying again.
Good morning,
Gregor said, awake and watchful on the pillow beside him. Miles said feelingly. Gregor rolled away to retrieve something, then silently presented Miles with an analgesic tablet and a glass of water. Miles accepted them and made noises of piteous gratitude as he washed out his arid mouth. They were quiet for a while as Miles silently urged the little tablet to do its work. He was dimly aware of Gregor beside him, propped on one elbow, watching him. At last, when the universe had edged up a notch from unbearable to merely dreadful, Gregor spoke. I need to know if there's anything I can do to make you less unhappy, he said.
I'm not unhappy, Miles said automatically.
Gregor inhaled carefully. Miles, there is a giant hole in our sitting room.
Oh,
Miles groaned and rolled onto his back.
Point.
Gregor waited a very long moment. Also a lot of unidentifiable equipment, he said. And a very excited gentleman from Vorbar Sultana University, who babbled a lot of things at me about the interactions of the acids in wood pulp paper,
We had startled each other quite badly, you see.
Oh, is that what that was?
Miles asked, excavating a dim memory of reeling in last night under Ivan's woozy direction, and thinking there was something peculiar happening in the sitting room. He sighed and rubbed at his eyes, then looked back over at Gregor, who wasn't angry or even annoyed. A shot of adrenaline jolted Miles's nerves. That was white-knuckled terror he was looking at.
"I'm not unhappy," Miles said. "Gregor, I swear it, I'm not having regrets."
"Good," Gregor said, easing off the invisible high wire. "But you're not particularly happy, either."
"No," Miles admitted. "But it's okay. Really, it is. It'll pass. I'll get used to it."
Gregor flushed, suddenly angry, like he hadn't been over Miles taking construction tools to the interior decor.
"You'll get used to it?" he repeated. "You'll what? You'll learn to bear it? And you think that's an acceptable way to... that I would just stand by while you..."
"Gregor, Gregor!" Miles said hastily, alarmed. "Really, I didn't mean to... damn it all, I'm just a little bored, all right? I hear uncorking a kid is the best cure for that anyway."
Gregor stared mutely, breath coming too fast. Then he passed a hand over his face and looked up at the ceiling.
"You're bored," he said.
"Well, yes," Miles said, exasperated. "I have nothing to do."
"You..." Gregor repeated. "Why didn't you say something?"
"Because I didn't want you to have to tell me to get my nose out of things," Miles said, frustrated. "I know you'd hate having to do it, and I know I'd really hate having to hear it, so..."
They'd never actually talked about this, not really, about what Miles's job would be after their marriage. But he'd thought Gregor had plans for him, that he could shoulder some of the load and be helpful. It wasn't Gregor's fault that had been abandoned on the beach, with public acceptance as fragile as one of those brittle old letters. Surely it would get better, eventually. And until then, Miles could exercise his patience and learn to be a good da.
"I didn't want to ask," Gregor said, "or to impose my expectations, because I thought you needed time and space to get your feet under you, to figure out what you wanted."
He rolled his head on the pillow and smiled tiredly.
"That was very silly of me, apparently."
"Oh,"
Miles said again, blinking. "You were being considerate."
"So were you," Gregor shot back.
"Yeah," Miles said. "Clearly we have to stop it at once for the sake of the marriage."
They eyed each other across the pillow as the nearer fight fizzled. Miles slid carefully closer, and Gregor's hand came around his waist to settle warmly on his back.
"Gregor?" Miles said softly into his collarbone. "May I have something to do? Please?"
"Of course," Gregor said warmly. "What did you have in mind?"
"What do you need?" Miles asked.
Gregor brushed his mouth over Miles's cheekbone, eyes closing briefly.
"Let me think about..."
"Yes?"
Miles asked, leaning back a bit.
"Lord Auditor Vorhovis," Gregor said slowly. "He came to see me yesterday."
"I know," Miles said. "You're in with him for a while."
"Yes," Gregor had stopped smiling. "He's dying," he said. "The brain cancer again, only worse this time." Oh, hell, Miles said with feeling. And there's nothing to be done?
Gregor shook his head. They've already done the retrogenic therapies, and it just came back anyway, he said. He has about 6 months.
Is he...
Miles began, then lacked the appropriate ending.
All right, certainly wasn't it. I should go see him.
He seemed accepting, Gregor said. But that's often the only face people will show me.
He laughed humorlessly.
He's Vorhovis. You know how he is. He suggested having the 6-month time window would be useful to me in finding his replacement.
Right, Miles said, the governmental implications sinking in. Vorhovis was one of the sharpest Imperial auditors Gregor had. It was one thing to leave a slot empty when one of the ancient, senile admirals died, waiting for the right man to come along to fill it. Quite another to carry on without Vorhovis, when they'd be painfully under strength.
Which is what I'd like you to do, I think, Gregor said.
Ah, Miles said, enlightened. Quietly, I assume.
Right. Easier that way, let me tell you, without everyone underfoot and hoping for the appointment. It'll be at least a few months before Vorhovis has to stop working.
Okay, Miles said. Do you have any particular sort of auditor in mind?
No, Gregor said comfortably. I think I'll leave that to your discretion, and perhaps your creativity.
It was going to be a massive undertaking, Miles slowly began to realize. Finding suitable people, getting a look at them, doing a thorough investigation to uncover any hint of impropriety. I can do that, he said, enormously gratified. Gregor hummed agreement into Miles's rumpled hair. They lay quietly for a long time as the holographic sun rose in the holographic sky. Sorry about the sitting room, Miles murmured at last. And the university chap. I know you don't like having strangers up here.
It was somewhat startling, Gregor said, dry but serene. And I wouldn't mind a little warning next time. But you've not said, what's actually going on out there?
Oh, Miles said, reminded. Right. See, I was thinking we need to expand a bit, what with the impending multiplication and all. I was thinking we could just take over Emperor Dorka's old rooms, if that's all right. Only there's something weird in between, and I found these letters.
Oh?
Gregor asked, interested. From Emperor Dorka. To one of his women, I'm thinking, Miles said. Though I never knew he actually moved one of them in here.
Might not have been a woman, Gregor murmured, running a hand down Miles's side to rest at his hip.
Miles blinked. You know, that never even occurred to me. Do you... Which was when the morning alarm sounded. It reinvigorated Miles's fading headache, and he huddled under his pillow for safety while Gregor rolled away and fumbled it off.
Damn, Gregor said. I'm having breakfast with the Baiten ambassador.
He excavated Miles from the pillows.
Tell me about it tonight, will you?
Oh, Miles said, reminded. Dinner, with my parents. Is that all right? I checked your schedule.
Of course, Gregor said. I'll put it down before someone else gets any bright ideas.
He rolled out of bed with his usual morning person efficiency. I should get started, Miles said, and did the same. 3 seconds later, he reeled face first into the wall and slid dizzily to the floor. Gregor's bare feet appeared in his field of view, and 2 capable hands lifted him under the arms.
You should go back to bed, Gregor said dryly, since I'm pretty sure you're still actually half drunk.
I'm perfectly, Miles began, then finished, willing to do that.
As Gregor steered him back to bed, and he felt how good it was to put his head down. You should also probably stop trying to outdrink Ivan, Gregor said, voice tart but fingers tender on Miles's forehead. I swear, you have one drink with him and you completely forget that he's twice your weight.
Yep, Miles agreed. It's completely Ivan's fault.
Gregor snorted and took his warm hands away to go shower. Miles dozed in and out, in the brightening sun and the warm covers. Gregor came back, briefly, smelling of cologne. The sleeve of his suit jacket was soft against Miles's neck, his fingers softer on Miles's face. He said something warm and quiet that Miles was too asleep to understand, but it lit a matching warmth in him, affirmation so instinctive it was a bodily reflex.